Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California and the club's Bay Gourmet Forum. The club can be found online at commonwealth.org. I'm Peggy Butler, chief blog at the blog successandchocolate.com. And your moderator for tonight's program of the same name, Success and Chocolate. We are pleased to have an all-star panel of chocolatiers from around the Bay Area. And with that, I'll introduce Zohara Mapes of CHO, Wendy of Socola Chocolates, Wendy Liu, Kathy Wiley of Poco Dolce, and Ellen Purdom from Toffee Talk, and they're all from San Francisco. And we're going to go right into the questions. So my first question is, what path led you to start a chocolate company? And we'll start with Ellen.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me? I'm Ellen Purdom, and I'm with Toffee Talk in San Francisco. And I'm in partnership with my darling cousin, best friend, and almost sister in the audience back here, Catherine Hughes. And Catherine and I had our big 50th birthdays a couple years ago and decided, oh, my God, 50 and fabulous, what are we going to do next? So we both have corporate careers, and we decided, let's start a candy company. So we did about 2 years ago. So that's how we got started, and I'm privileged tonight to be here on the panel with these darling women who are very experienced and have amazing chocolate companies. So that's how we got started. We said, let's do it. Let's give it a try.
Thanks, Ellen. And Kathy?
Well, I had had many different careers and always wanted my own business. And then, you know, things kind of came together where I wanted to quit my existing job, and I figured the time was right. So I bought my first car. I quit my job. I gave myself 6 months to think about things. I drove home, which happened to be Alaska, and started my company. I just thought about it and figured it out and did it.
And your background was also in IT, which is very unlike chocolate.
Exactly. So
how'd you go from IT to chocolate?
Well, you know, I mean, the truth is chocolate and confections, there's a science to it. And then there's the creative aspect of it. So I think for me, it was like the perfect mix.
Uh-huh. Okay, thanks. Wendy?
Hi, everyone. My name is Wendy. I'm with Socola Chocolatier. I started Socola Chocolates with my sister 11 years ago in Santa Rosa selling at a farmer's market. We've continued our business every year, and as of 3 years ago, we decided to grow our company in San Francisco. So I have another job, and I'm also growing Socola Chocolatier.
Thank you.
I actually started in the technology world, too. I did computer graphics for a long time, and at the end of the day, I would be so tired of staring at the screen that I would want to work with my hands, and I always loved chocolate, and my grandmother was French, and it was kind of a lovely fairy tale into that history, and so I would just make truffles for fun, and friends would freak out and beg me to do more of it, and so eventually, I took a course in chocolate technology and apprenticed for a while with local Michael Ricciuti, and then I started my own company also at farmers markets while doing another job, doing my computer stuff, and then joined CHO. So I've been with CHO for about 5 years since the beginning.
Thank you. So how did you, do you make your own chocolate? And if not, how did you decide where to buy it from? You guys can just jump in whenever, or do you want me to go down the line? We'll just start with Ellen.
Okay. Well, we do not make our own chocolate. We, over very many taste testings, came up with the perfect chocolate in San Francisco that has the perfect amount of salt. And if you guys taste your toffee tonight, you'll taste a little bit of salt in it. And so it was a lot of testing different chocolates, and we decided that Guittard semi-sweet was for us. So we don't make our own chocolate, but you'll find on every little piece on your chair that guitar semi-sweet is sort of what makes our candy very, very special. It's that chocolate.
Kathy?
I would second Ellen. I would say that it's always fun to be more local, and we did a lot of taste tests, and we resulted in Guittard also. So Guittard has a really broad range you can play with. We do a little bit of a blend, so each product kind of has a little blend of a couple different Guittard products, but they're great. You know they're always fresh. They haven't been sitting on a boat or in a warehouse, and that's us.
A representative from Guittard should be here tonight.
Exactly.
Wendy, do you use Guittard as well?
I do, actually.
Wow. I didn't know this.
Yeah, I actually find that it's a good, like, medium body chocolate where, as a chocolatier, I can infuse flavors in it and the chocolate doesn't dominate over any of the specific ingredients. So I find it as a good middle ground. And I also just want to caution you that the chocolates are sriracha hot sauce, so make sure that you want to eat something hot before you eat it. So.
And Guittard is based in San Francisco.
It's Burlingame, actually.
Burlingame. They're local. Zahara, I know that you do make your own chocolate.
Right, yeah. Well, when I was making confections, when I had my own business, I used actually a range. I was really strict with organic primarily. I used some Guittard when I was just looking for the flavor range, but I also used a lot of Dagoba chocolate at the time because early on they were one of the only ones doing good quality organic that you could buy in bulk that was somewhat consistent. And would have the flavor range. For me as a chocolatier, I really wanted to explore the flavor range of chocolate, which is what led me into chocolate making. I really wanted to understand the, why one chocolate tasted so different from another, why I would taste one that had all this fruitiness or one maybe from Ecuador that would be more nutty, which is the chocolate that you see actually on some of your chairs. There was two. So one would be like a chocolatey, for example, from Ghana, which is a very typical chocolate flavor. Most of the chocolate in the world comes from Africa. So when you think of a chocolate flavor, it's that African cocoa, which is why in Cho we call it a chocolatey. For example, the chocolate from Peru, which some of you got as well, is in an orange square, and that has a really typical fruity acidity. And that was what really excited me about chocolate, is just the range and why it was so different. And so when I was making my confections, I really sourced from different chocolate makers and got as wide a flavor profile I could get and paired flavors with those, as opposed to using more of a blended chocolate and then, making the special flavor of the truffle that Guittard would be really good at showcasing maybe a specific flavor. If you want to showcase sriracha, you wouldn't want another strong chocolate flavor competing with that. You want something that will marry nicely. So it's really, about your palate and what works for what you're trying to create. So.
And your company, Cho, you make your chocolate here in San Francisco.
Right. So we source the beans from all over the world and then make the chocolate here in San Francisco.
And you have tours. I understand. Do you show people how the chocolate is made?
Yeah. We have tours of the factory 2 times a day. You can sign up online at our website, cho.com, and welcome to come visit.
The next question is, how did you come up with the name of your company? So I'll just start with you instead, Zahara, because you guys have such a unique name. Is it an acronym, or what does CHO stand for?
Well, actually, I wasn't part of the naming process, so I think it was just, it worked out. It was kind of a complicated name, because people always ask, how do you pronounce it? But, it's the first phonetic syllable of chocolate, kind of with a D, chocolate, so that's how it was.
Okay. Wendy, how did you come up with your name?
So our company name is Sokla, which actually means chocolate in Vietnamese.
Oh, wow.
I was 19 when I started the company, so we weren't, I guess, that creative. So we named our company Chocolate Chocolates. being Vietnamese, everyone asked us if the cacao is from Vietnam. And at the time, it wasn't. But actually, now we can say that some of it is because Vietnam is actually importing cacao now. And it's been growing for over the last 7 years, and it's actually a good product that doesn't taste like pencil shavings, so it's great.
Kathy, I just interviewed you for my blog, so I know the answer, but I'll let you tell the audience. Yeah. How did you come up with your name?
So I was working on the name long distance with my little sister, and we were just playing around with terms and everything, We were kind of playing around with changing the language. So you pick a name and then you pick the language. And she came up with, like, Sweet Tooth. And we happened to be, I was on the other end of the phone looking in Italian. And I was like, yeah, that sounds, it's too much like a dentist. Dente Dolce. So then I came up with Poco Dolce, and it ended up really working for us because, I mean, it's certainly a fun name, but the literal translation is not too sweet or just a little sweet, which is really pretty much what we do.
And what does Toffee Talk mean?
Oh, my God. Toffee Talk, the name, I think, was one of the hardest things of starting your own business, is coming up with what are you going to call this, what, you know, how are you going to differentiate yourself, and the name is critical. And so we heard that if you have two consonants together, that that's very successful in business, like Krispy Kreme, right? Toffee Talk. But it's really kind of a cute story because we tossed around tons of names, but thinking of that double consonant and how a lot of companies are very successful with that double consonant, that people remember that. And when Catherine and I were at her 50th birthday, she sat everybody down and said, let's talk toffee, because she was going to start this business. And we said, wait a minute, that's it. That's it. That's the name, Toffee Talk. So, and we also have the Mike Myers Coffee Talk from Saturday Night Live that people often say, are you Coffee Talk and Toffee Talk? And so anyway, Toffee Talk stuck, and we had our double consonants, and we just ran with it. And we've been having a lot of fun, because once you eat it and you talk about it, you can't stop talking about it. So that's it.
I can tell you, I always think of Coffee Talk when I hear that. And then I want to go into the whole NPR voice.
I'm working on Mike Myers.
That's great, Ellen.
So how did how did you finance your company? Ellen, when you guys came up with the name on your Hawaiian vacation, then what?
Ours is easy. It's self-financed right now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we've put up all the capital ourselves, and so far we're doing okay. But we both work. We have other jobs as well to help pay the mortgage and, you know, do the critical things. But right now we're self-financed.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, do you want to share?
Sure. I would say I really didn't have much finance. So the first years were a little bit difficult, but I was really financed through family members, you know, who mm-hmm. helped me through the years. And certainly my friends and family with support and labor, free labor.
Mm-hmm. Free labor.
You all started your companies before Kickstarter.
Yes.
That would have been helpful. Wendy?
Yeah, when I started my company 11 years ago, I was only a teenager, so I didn't have very much money. It is self-financing. I started with $500, and I've just set aside a bank account that's separate for the company. And so I've put in a little bit of money since then, but it's just been its own company running.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for our next round of financing coming up soon. So
impressive. And Sohara?
Yeah, when I started my own confection company, I was talking with Wendy earlier, I think I started with a tax return. I bought my first tempering machine, which was a big step.
Yeah.
And then it was all self-finance. I worked my dual job, and until then, when I joined Cho, then I quit everything else, and Cho has had investors. So.
I have a question from the audience that fits right into this conversation. Are you profitable, if you care to share? Is that too personal? Okay, I don't think they want to say. another one on the same subject.
Yes, Toffee Talk is profitable.
Oh, thank you.
We are too.
I would imagine Cho is. You're all profitable. Wow. What is or was the tipping point for leaving your day jobs and moving full-time into your business? A lot of you have already said you're still working, but what will be the tipping point?
I'll start. That's really hard. So my cousin and partner is doing this full-time, and I'm helping out. But it's very difficult because with medical benefits and everything that everybody has to come up with today, it's a very difficult endeavor. So I'm not quite ready to give up my day job. My hope is to at some point soon. So, but not quite yet. I mean, it's challenging, and it's really a commitment.
I pretty much just dove in. I didn't feel like I could actually give 100% to it if I didn't quit that job, so I just took that leap, and, you know, it was a struggle for many years, but I think it was worth it, and I don't know that I could have concentrated on it enough if I had another position.
Mm-hmm. I currently have another job. I'm in management consulting, and I just moved to part-time. So before, I was working five days a week, and I'm working 3 days a week. I have a sales goal that I've set, and once I hit that, I'll decide transition fully to Sokola.
Thank you. You're obviously full-time with Cho, so Hora. How do you market your products? Do you use social media, which is what everyone's using these days to market their products? I thought we could have a little conversation about social media. Ellen, I know that you do.
Well, that's primarily 100% how Catherine and I have been marketing Toffee Talk. It's been unbelievable for us, the social networking aspect through Twitter, Facebook. Your friends and family are an amazing source of people and connections. All you have to do is ask. And I actually met all of these ladies here tonight on Twitter and Facebook. And to be able to follow what people in your industry are doing and reaching out to seeing what they're doing and who they're connecting with has been unbelievable. And we do not have a brick and mortar because we don't want the overhead of having a store. So we have a complete online presence. And so far, it's been great. And it's the social media aspect of this has really exploded our business.
Can you give us an example, a specific example?
Okay, my favorite example is that I ride the bus and I tweet and Facebook to San Francisco, to and fro, to my job in San Francisco. And I started a conversation with this woman next to me on the bus that I've been riding the bus with her for 24 years. And I didn't even know her name. I knew that we had kids in common, and we always said hello. And then one day I gave her my Toffee Talk card, and I just, oh, my God, my name is Ellen. And there's my card. And she goes, oh, my God, my sister buys all the snacks for Google. So I said, really? So she said, can you get me some samples? And I said, sure. Sure, tomorrow. So that is a little social networking on my bus that has turned into one of our largest corporate client right now. So we're providing 100 cases to Google every month.
Awesome.
Based on my little social networking.
Nice. Does Polka Dolce, I know you're on Twitter and Facebook, has it been?
Yeah, we absolutely do social media, but we started mainly as a wholesale company, so we do 1 to 2 trade shows a year. We try and do a few consumer shows. As social media has, you know, if we're talking about the technology aspect of it, we do Twitter, we do Facebook, we have Google+, and all that kind of stuff. And certainly I would say that what you're talking about is the other face of social media, which is talking to the person next to you, you know, sharing your card, talking about what you do, which, you know, I try and bring samples with me. Certainly when I'm traveling and you have the opportunity, you're sitting next to somebody for 5 hours on the plane and you start talking to them about it or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we do as much of that as possible. And, you know, we put this on Facebook. We put as many events as possible on it. But we also do trade shows and a few other things that, you know, get us out to that other side.
Mm-hmm. Do you try to track your return on investment on
it's
social media?
It's pretty impossible to track your return on investment. It would be nice. It would be great to be able to do that. But I think it's more about engaging the customer and having that social interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you feedback. It makes more of a connection. And I think for the relatively low cost involved, I think we personally don't even bother with return on investment. We do it for the culture and lifestyle of the business and the product. Mm-hmm. And the branding.
Thank you. Wendy?
Yeah, we definitely take advantage of Facebook and Twitter, but we take it to another level. I don't know if you've met my sister, Susan. We started the company together. She's really crazy. when we launch new flavors, we come up with creative ideas to raise awareness for them. So, for example, the sriracha chocolate that you have, we decided to launch a 3-episode telenovela to announce the chocolate to the world. So we created that chocolate in July of last year. So my sister wrote, created, and filmed that movie, and she starred in it as the chocolate bar.
That's right. I think I got a call from you guys asking to borrow a chocolate pod for that.
I think so. So she filmed it in like a day. This is 3-episode, 10 minutes each. It's very quirky. So I think our personality shines through in our company. We try to make sure our company is fun and that we have a good time, too.
Great. Thank you. I know Cho is all over social media.
Yeah, well, we, you know, one of the things that we kind of did is a lot of us are from technology, too, so we applied beta to our chocolate, which was a fun way to involve people through media. And so in the very beginning, we were just making batches in our lab before we even had the factory finished and put out multiple iterations of A and B to our community, and then people would log in online and give their feedback as to which recipe they liked, and then we would go and make the next iteration. And so we went through, God, I don't even know how many, but quite a large number of iterations until we finally decided on what our final formula would be for launching the company. Mm-hmm. And we've done that throughout a lot of our products and continue to do it. So it's a fun way to get people involved and hear from our community what people like and which direction that we want to take it.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. I have a question from the audience. What do you enjoy most about your chocolate business and what keeps you going? Ellen, I would imagine it would be like that person on the bus.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. It's infectious for me. I love our product. I can talk about our product. Anybody who tastes our product loves it. So for me, it's like, oh my God, I have a goal every day. Like, okay, what inroad can we make? What contact can I do today? And every day there's some little accomplishment or some account that we've secured, and it's my favorite tool is the Google Alert. So you can set up a Google Alert for Toffee Talk or Toffee or anything, and every day I check my Google Alerts and I have Toffee Talk. Oh my God, we've got a hit on this blogger, or we've the excitement of the chase. And it's, to me, it's like, oh my God, this is what I was born to do, I think. And I've been in the investment world for 30 years, so it's, to me, it's just exciting, it's fun, it's challenging. We have a wonderful product, and we just have to continue to get the word out. So that's what makes me get up and skip every day.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Kathy?
Yeah, I would agree with it. It's just a fun type of business to be part of. I mean, it brings a smile to people's face. There's a lot of work involved, but it's just fun. You get to taste chocolate and confections all day. I mean,
it sounds like fun.
What more can you say?
Not much. Wendy, do you have any more to say? What keeps you going?
I love coming up with new flavor creations. I love I traveled a lot during college and after college, and I would find something that would inspire me, like, for example, guava when I traveled to Cuba. And I just thought, oh, this is so delicious. I need to pair it with chocolate. And I would come back home in my chocolate lab and just mess around and come up with something. But I just love coming up with new ideas and just things you wouldn't think of, especially Eastern-flavored chocolates. And I just love seeing people eat the chocolates and saying, you know, that they enjoy it and they love it. And it just brings a smile to my face, too. So,
thank you. Sarah?
Yeah, I would say most people in the chocolate industry really love what they're doing. And so it's an amazing community to be a part of. And, you know, even just talking about chocolate. I was recently in the hospital, and it was so amazing. You just ask a doctor, you know, do you like chocolate? And their face just lights up. I love chocolate. And so here you're in some stressful situation, and instantly you guys are having a moment of fun, you know. So even on days when I get stressed out, you know, another one of our chocolate makers, Brad, will look at each other and be like, it's chocolate, you know. So I work with great people, and also really making a social difference. I think the work that we do with the farmers at Origin, and really seeing changes over time, and getting incredible quality and knowledge exchange within, you know, going from commodity crop to specialty cocoa. We're doing a lot of fun work with sensory analysis training with the farmers. And so we'll taste over Skype and through our database. So we'll have, you know, a group in Peru, for example, in a lab that we've set up there, and us here, and tasting the same sample of the same cocoa, and, you know, talking in Spanish and English. And that's really exciting for me, mm-hmm. to really have that kind of connection and depth with the source, and you know, obviously just sharing in something that we all really love. So.
That's great. And that fits in with another question from the audience about your environmental principles. And do you use fair trade chocolate, or do you use eco-friendly packaging? Do you want to start with that?
Sure. We use a blend of some that's fair trade and some that's not. Obviously, there's incredible work being done. And we have our own program called ChoSource. That really, we have a grant that's in partnership with a group called Equal Exchange, and it's through the USAID, and so it's for cooperative development, and that's allowing us to do a lot of work in Peru and Ecuador, and we're also installing a new lab in the Dominican Republic later this month. And then we hope to expand that into Africa. It's been harder to get into Africa, just the political situations that are there. And but we have some exciting doorways in with the Cocoa Board. It's a governmental agency within Ghana that controls all the cocoa. And they're very excited about doing a lab because, you know, having analysis of each region's flavor, and then you can get a better quality by really handling each specific region in its own way to get new flavors. And so that's pretty exciting for us. And so we have, I know our Madagascar chocolate is organic, but fair trade, you have to be you can't actually be owned by one particular farm. It has to be a cooperative, I believe, to qualify. And so different regions have very specific, different qualifications. So in Africa, it's very hard to get the quality that's organic and fair trade that we need, because we're looking for specific flavor profiles first. But within Ecuador and Peru, we're able to do organic and fair trade.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Do you know if Guittard is fair trade, the chocolate?
So basically, Guittard, it's a family-run business. It's about 100 years old. Clearly, they've been doing business a lot longer than all of these certifications that come about. It's a question that comes up for us a lot, and I'm not sure, probably for you guys. And we go back to Guittard and say, well, you know, what's going on here? There's a lot of changes right now going on with Guittard in terms of there's a little bit of a younger generation that's coming in and takes a different tact with those situations. Mm-hmm. I would say that they've been working with farmers for a long time. They, although they haven't chosen to actually get that specific certification, and let's be honest, sometimes there's a lot of certifications out there. They are part of the World Cocoa Foundation. They are actively involved in the cocoa farms and, pay as fair a price as possible. So that's what we get. That's the information we get from them. And I do think that, you know, there are a lot of sort of certifications that come and go. And I think you need to know the company you're doing business with. You need to know what their ethical principles are. And I feel solid in Guittard.
Mm-hmm. Great. And I'd agree with what Kathy said.
Okay. Thank you. So premium chocolate is so popular now. Every time I go to Whole Foods, I buy a new $7 bar of chocolate. Why do you think that is? And when I was a kid, I think like Fannie Mae was the most popular, you know, the most premium chocolate. Why is premium chocolate so popular now?
I would say that it's just people, you know, on our side of the fence, people have so much fun working with new flavors and trying different things. We have an olive oil and sea salt bar. I mean, you get to play so much that it's also fun for the customer to go in and be like, oh my God, what does somebody come up with next?
Mm-hmm. Bacon.
You know, bacon, whatever. You know, I mean, what would you...
Oh, I was just thinking of my bacon one, Notorious H-O-G. Yeah, we have a bacon one, too. But, yeah, I don't know. I think, for like, chocolate, I think for me, I like things that have not been manufactured intensely. So, for example, like milk chocolate where they add, like, milk solids and other ingredients. I like something that has, like, the least ingredients as possible. And so I think the high-end chocolate market is taking off because... chocolatiers and chocolate makers are focused on using high-quality products with very few additives, and that tastes really great.
I would say that also just as people get more educated around food, they want to know more about sources, and then that's where quality comes in. You know, just look at what happened in coffee in the last 20 years. You know, you started with, say, bulk commodity coffee that was, you had to put a lot of sugar and a lot of cream in it to make it drinkable, but now you have the whole third wave coffee that's happened, and basically it's a lot of training that they basically implemented Q-cupping, which has completely changed the coffee industry, which it's actually sensory analysis training for the farmers, and they actually grade coffee on this and actually base the price on the flavor that you get out of it. And so we're hoping to expand more of that into chocolate and specialty cocoa. And I really think that that's happening. I mean, you know, basically now everybody wants something above 70%. And what that means is that 70% is cacao, right? That's got to taste really good. So that means that you're going to have to handle those beans really well in order to get them to taste good. Otherwise, you're going to put a lot of milk and a lot of sugar on it to get it to taste okay. So I think like, you know, coffee or wine, as people get more educated about the sourcing, then the quality is going to go up and people want less sugar. And so I think that that's a big part of it.
That makes sense. What is your top-selling item for Cho?
Well, when people want chocolate, they think chocolatey. So our chocolatey bars are top-selling item.
And Wendy, yours?
For us, it's our Café Sữa, which means it's a Vietnamese coffee. I'm Vietnamese, so... I took a coffee and turned it to Vietnamese coffee. And then also sriracha is really popular right now. So, yeah.
For us, it would definitely be our burnt caramel toffee tiles. Well, there's a popular one in each line, but that's the standout.
And our most popular is the one that's on your chair.
What kind of nut is on
and
that toffee?
And that's our traditional almond toffee. But we do have three other flavors. But... the almond is hands down the favorite and award winner. Yeah.
Thank you. Question from the audience. What advice would you have for someone wanting to start her own business? Who wants to go first? Ellen?
You have to have great family support. And you have to have... It's a huge commitment, but... and our favorite motto is don't listen to the naysayers. So we have a lot of people who said, you're nuts. What are you two doing? And every time we have a little success, we look at each other and laugh and say, don't listen to the naysayers. And it just takes some determination and who knows what's going to happen in the next few years. But we have a really strong relationship, the two of us together, and we're in it for fun. Okay, that's the bottom line, is that we were in it to have some fun, and if something happens, fantastic. And so far, 2 years in, we're doing it, and we're having fun. So, but it's a big leap, but I would say anyone who's thinking of starting their business, call us, because we've learned so much, and any of these ladies, too. And we've shared from all the women in the industry and chocolatiers, they're there to help you. And we wouldn't be able to do it without the help of these darling people who have come before us. So ask for help.
Thank you. Kathy?
Well, I would say certainly go for it. That's my attitude. You do want to be logical about it. I would get feedback from friends and family and really listen to what they say. and hopefully adapt to make your business as successful as possible. Certainly, it's always fun. And I would say perseverance is a trait you kind of have to have.
Mm-hmm. Wendy, do you remember how you felt when you started your own business at 15?
Well, 19. But I would say you should be willing to work hard. Very, very hard, like till 3 a.m. hard, and then have to scrub chocolate off tiles hard. And if someone doesn't show up to work or something doesn't get done, you have to do it. So you better have that perseverance and drive to do it. The other thing I would say is make sure that you apprentice with someone and make sure you read up a lot on what you want to get into and make sure that you really, really want to do that. Because you'll be spending a lot of time on it.
Yeah. I would say that if you can't stop thinking about it and you really love it and you know, it's all that you want to do and you really think hard about it, like everybody say, and you know that that's what you want to do, that you shouldn't let anybody stop you. You just have to do it. And you start doing it and then start networking. I'd say networking is very key. You know, in taking the course in chocolate technology, I met some key allies that I ended up traveling in South America with and going to the cocoa farms, and they became long-term friends and consultants over the years and inspirations. And so I would say definitely connect with your network in whatever it is, any kind of business, whatever your passion is, just look to see who's doing something that inspires you and really draw from that. And it definitely is endless. Night and day, and you'll dream about it.
I would like to also add, the consultant in me is saying, make sure you set a plan with some dates and some success criteria, and then if you don't meet them, you need to reevaluate that. I'm doing that, too.
And know that it always takes much longer than you think. Yes. So if you don't meet those first, it's just, that's probably, you know, to be expected, but worth paying attention to.
Yeah.
Takes longer and takes more money than you think.
Good advice. Does San Francisco make it easy to run a business or not? Lots of groans. Kathy?
I think it's fine when you're really small. I mean, as you grow, more restrictions come into play, more taxes. I know that as we grow, it is more difficult. I mean, I'm not really worried about this point because I don't want to live anywhere else but here. But certainly you do have to consider those kind of things. It's a lot of other places make it a lot easier. Would I trade it? Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm. And Toffee Talk, we manufacture in San Rafael in Marin County. We're in San Francisco, but our kitchen is in Marin, which makes a huge difference for us for employment and taxes. And one of the key advices we had is it's very difficult to have a business in San Francisco. So our address is in San Francisco, but our employees are in Marin, which makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anyone else?
I would say that San Francisco has such an incredible food culture, and so being in the city is an amazing just a thing to be part of that network. And so I would say that's just the Bay Area in general is such a cultural, food-centered place. So that's a joy for us all to be part of, I think.
Wendy, is your kitchen in San Francisco?
My kitchen's actually in South San Francisco. So I would agree with everything else the panelists said.
Mm-hmm. Question from the audience. What percentage of your budget goes towards samples? We know tonight a lot. Zahara, do you want to start? You guys give out a lot of samples in your store.
Yeah, I don't know if I can answer that.
Okay. Wendy?
I couldn't estimate that. Maybe like 1 or 2% actually. Uh-huh. Don't sample a ton.
I have no idea either. I mean, basically, we have to try and keep it curbed a little bit because you can give away the business, you know. So we try and stay a little bit lean and mean with it.
And we found that we have to have samples because people have to taste it to buy the product. We found that really goes hand in hand. That if our customer can taste the candy if it's sitting on a counter and there's a little sample tray right there. As soon as they taste it, man, they're going to buy it. So our philosophy, and it, I don't know, we'll see how it serves us, is we give out a hell of a lot of samples. And hopefully it will pay out.
Do you personally prefer dark or milk chocolate? Or should I add white to the equation, or is that even a chocolate?
Dark.
Dark.
Although I like milk chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, particularly, we worked on a milk chocolate recently and put out new milk chocolate, and so I like our dark milk chocolate because it's much less sweet, but it's kind of fun to play with good, high-quality organic milk and the interesting flavors that come out when you mix the two, just like you put, you know, cream in your coffee or milk in your chocolate, or even when you're making a ganache, you put cream in it often, so I like, there's things I like about milk chocolate.
At what percentage of cacao is it considered dark? 60, 65?
I think it's considered dark as long as you don't put milk in it.
Okay.
It's 55.
55.
But it's also, the term dark doesn't really come into play. It's like bittersweet, semi-sweet.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So it's dark if it's not milk.
Thank you. Okay, another question from the audience. What are your business dreams for the future, and would you ever like to go public? Is Cho public?
No.
Do you know if
I don't think I can answer that.
Okay. Wendy?
For us, we like to be a boutique chocolatier that focuses on online market. And I was just talking to one of the participants here, but we'd like to become the Zappos of chocolate. Okay. Their motto is to focus on happiness, and they build a great culture with their employees. And I like to do the same thing and build our online presence.
Why don't we start that?
Zappos
for chocolate.
You see?
They come to your door the next day.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can get every single
great
one of these
customer service, right?
Do you want to
Wendy, it's a great idea.
Zappos for chocolate. Our five-year plan is to ideally have our own commercial kitchen and run that as a business because right now we rent space out, which is perfect for us, so we don't have the overhead. But our dream is to have our own commercial kitchen, and then we could help other chocolatiers and other foodies who are starting in the food business who are looking. There's a real market for people looking for good commercial kitchens that they can rent when they're starting out. Mm-hmm. So that is a real dream of ours in 5 years. And would we want to go public? Hell yes.
Of course.
But I like Zappos for chocolate. We're going to talk after the show.
I don't know that I would ever want to go public per se, but certainly I'd love to grow. My dream is to own a house in San Francisco. I would love to buy a building and have a chocolate destination in the city. That would be my dream.
Sounds good. You've all talked about how hard you work. What do you do when you're not working?
Work.
All right. Is there a time when you're not sleeping or working, Zohara?
I live right near Golden Gate Park, and it's beautiful. Any chance I get, I go out there and spend time up around Stowe Lake walking or riding my bike out to the ocean and listening to music. I was at the Stern Grove concert on Sunday. It was really lovely. And, you know, spending time with friends and lots of endless fun to be had in San Francisco.
Wendy?
If I'm not in the chocolate kitchen or if not in front of my laptop, then I'm hanging out with my family. My siblings all live in the Bay Area. They have children of their own, so I have three nephews. I spend a lot of time with them. And if I'm not doing that, I'm eating all over the city.
Agreed. I would say I don't have any family here, so my family are my friends. And I'm always cooking for or with friends. We're going out to eat or traveling to see family and cooking and eating with them.
Yeah, a lot of cooking and eating, too.
A lot of cooking and eating and traveling.
And I try to spend time with my darling husband, who has been totally ignored through this whole process.
Oh. So
that's what I'm doing on my time off, which is not very often.
A couple of technical chocolate questions from the audience. Where does the name chocolate come from, and what country does the original chocolate come from?
It's definitely South America. It's like the Chocotal, it's like Chocotal. Pronounce that for me.
I know Zoe knows it. Is it Chocolatl or something? Yes, the god, it's Mayan.
XO, yeah.
I forget how to say it.
I can't
exactly
say it.
Too.
Chocolatl. Chocolatl.
Kakawa, I
everybody
think, was
has
one
to,
of
everybody
them.
Everybody has to say it once
I
on
think
the
it's
panel.
Kakawa. Kakawa was one of the original, which is close to cacao. Kakawa is like a Mayan term. I don't know. We're all
sorry.
Lacking on
it
that.
Is more, it is more Mayan. Yeah. I mean, they originally would grind it and just have no sugar, nothing. It was just, you know, theobroma is food of the gods, and they would grind it and put it with water and just drink it. And everybody should probably have to try that once because it's not what you want. It's not what you assimilate into chocolate nowadays.
It's just like cacao mass, and then you cut, you shave a little bit of it off and add milk or milk and sugar, and then you can make some hot chocolate with it. I had it in Cuba.
Yeah, I mean, you can do drinking chocolate. It's probably pretty similar, but I think sweetened with honey, if you use an unsweetened, is maybe more typical.
Yeah.
But often they grind it. Like, in, I was when I was just getting interested in cacao, I went down to Belize and up into the Mayan jungles up there, and there was this little Mayan lady by the river, and she was friends with the people who we were staying with, and I got these little round balls that were the cacao. It was just the ground beans. She ground them with. Sometimes they grind them with nuts and spices too. But it was just the pure. This was just the pure ground beans, and they were amazing. So I would come home and just grate them and mix them with water, and you can sweeten it with whatever you want. Yep. You know, honey or sugar. You know, put milk in it if you want, or just drink it with water because the fat has the cacao butter itself. When you mix it with water, it can froth on its own. So when you mix it quickly, it creates the emulsification and gets foam. And that was the delicacy, was you would actually pour it from these vessels. You could see pictures sometimes on old Mayan vessels where they would pour from high to low, and then it would froth it, and that was the delicacy, was the froth.
Thank you. Who are your business role models, and if you have any, do you have business role models?
I would say early on, definitely Frederick, who started DeGoba Chocolate, was a real role model for me. To see somebody who loved chocolate, had this passion, and could actually also create a sustainable business around it, supporting his beliefs in rainforest preservation and you know, global sustainability. And he really had a large impact. He sold his company to Hershey and now has a couple other businesses, one doing organic cacao in Brazil, and then another one in Bali. He actually built a completely sustainable bamboo chocolate factory in Bali. And so he's definitely been a real inspiration for me in the chocolate industry, as well as Michael and Jackie Ricciuti locally. They're just love and enthusiasm for creating incredible high-quality products.
Mm-hmm. Wendy, do you have a role model?
Yeah, my role model is actually my father, and I say it from an entrepreneurial perspective. I come from an immigrant family. I was born in Malaysia, and my family are boat people from Vietnam and moved to Malaysia. And they've just been able to start businesses with very little money, and they have such a drive, where my mom and my dad, so they both have a drive to start a business and be able to support their families. And so my dad definitely inspires me every day.
I have to second that. It would definitely be my father. Be my father and my brother. My father ran businesses and had his own business, again, in Alaska. And my brother has a very successful business. And I think I always took for granted his business because he kind of got a leg up from my father, my family, which I didn't necessarily have except from him. And then I realized once I had my own business, I was like, wow, this has nothing to do what you start out with. It's what you do in the years intervening and your perseverance and being able to stick to it and doing making all the hard decisions. So I respect him and appreciate him in a totally different way.
And it's so funny because I was going to say that for Catherine and I, our business models are my dad and uncle, who have had their own business together for 50 years in the East Bay. And they've been able to work together as family members with very successfully. And so Catherine and I look at them as a role model. Well, when things get tough or we disagree, we go back to my dad and my uncle and say, oh, my God, these two characters have been in business for 50 years and they're family members. And, you know, blood is thicker than water. And so, again, my dad and uncle have been our inspirations as well.
Thank you. We have time for two more questions. I have another question from the audience. Do you know what your customer profile is? Age, gender, income? I'm curious, do mostly women buy chocolate?
For us, it's definitely females. I want to say 30 to 45. I'm not necessarily the one who keeps tabs on this stuff, mm-hmm. but yes, it's definitely skews to female for us.
Wendy?
It's pretty similar. I think men also buy a lot of chocolate, and they also buy it for gifts as women, so I don't know if it skews that, too.
Well, yeah. That's the other half of the equation.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'd say our demographic is definitely women, for sure, in the age group of 30 to 50. That's our favorite demographic, anyway. And then we also have the Googlers, who are, you know, young 24-year-olds who are getting our candy in their hands, too. So we love that demographic.
And for Cho Sahara?
Yeah, I would say I don't know exactly what our demographic is. I'd say we try and spread it, you know, as much. We are also in Google Micro Kitchens, and so we have a lot of that, like, techie kind of, like, my mom used to work for Linden Lab, and a lot of them would come over and get their chocolate stash by their desk. But I know that as a company mind frame, we've really geared towards millennials. And so that's kind of the mind frame that we aim at. But I think that as a company, we reach a pretty wide, but I don't know exactly who's purchasing our chocolate. That's not what I focus on. I focus on if it tastes good.
Right. And last question. What would you say is your or your company's greatest professional accomplishment to date?
Ellen? Well, I'll start and finish up. I think our greatest accomplishment was landing the Google account, which shot us on a trajectory that we would have never, ever imagined. And we had to figure out pretty darn quickly how we were going to fulfill manufacturer. And we looked at each other and said, well, I guess that's a real tough problem to have. And we did it. We came up with it. And we, you know, and if we can figure out how to put together 10,000 pieces of candy every 6 weeks, we can pretty much do anything. And so we'll figure out next what will take us to the next level. But for sure, that was our greatest accomplishment, that we weren't just doing this as a hobby, that we could launch this as a business. And we found out today that that Zynga is going to feature us next month as their snack of the month. So we're hoping... we'll be delivering Toffee Talk to Zynga August 1st. So it's exciting, and that's our biggest accomplishment.
Thank you, Ellen. Kathy?
I would say for us that there are a lot of small accomplishments that add up to the one main accomplishment, and that is still being here and being successful. I would say my favorite thing that I'm proud of is being in all the little shops that my father loved, because he would come to San Francisco all the time, and... I've been in all the ones that say Gumps and William Sonoma and just all the ones that he would have been proud of.
That's awesome.
And Wendy?
Yep. For us, we get a lot of local recognition, which is nice, just because, you know, we're being ourselves, and so it makes us happy that, you know, we could be ourselves. But I think we also have a lot of corporate accounts as well, so that is success for us. And then also, just recently, my sister and I won the Pacific Asian American Women's Bay Area Coalition Monarch Leadership Award. And I think, you know, that... it's a long acronym. So I think that, you know, that as I'm growing with the company, I'm also learning to be a leader in the Asian American community with giving back to some organizations that support Vietnam and a lot of children in Vietnam. So we also have that. We're able to support those organizations, so that's a great accomplishment for us.
Great. Sohara?
I would say this morning I actually just read an email. I haven't actually had time to read the report, but John Kehoe, he's our director of ChoSource, he got brought in, was really an expert in sourcing cacao around the world, and through the work that he's been doing, we were able to get that grant and for cooperative development, and that's allowed us to do these trainings and put in labs down in origin. And so there was just a local competition in Peru of all the cacao to see, you know, what flavors were best. And out of all, like, the top winner, and then out of all the ones that placed in the ranking, everybody had access to one of the labs that we helped implement in letting the farmers actually make and create and see what, you know, what aspects influence the flavor the most. And so I think in helping, you know, the developmental work at origin to increase the quality over time, I think that's what I'm most proud about as far as the company's work.
Thank you, and thank you to all the panelists. And thank you to the audience. Thank you to the audience here at the Commonwealth Club of California, and to those listening to the recording. And this adjourns the program.